G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Now, we're going to go straight to this person because he was at Tullamarine last night, coming back from Doha from the Middle East, and he comes in and joins us, Scott Gallen, the jet setter.
It's wonderful to be here. Wonderful to be back.
What time did your plane touch down last night?
Where were we? Around the 7:30 mark? And then we may have missed the connecting bus to get us back to Geelong. It's a setback. So, no, it's been emotional. But I feel quite good, actually.
Do you actually know what's going on in the world of sport?
Oh, all over it. Doha. There's big about footy over there. Trade week.
We'll talk to you about
that. Is it over?
Well, it's
I thought I was going to miss it all.
Allegedly started. There hasn't been a trade yet. There's been a couple of free agents.
Oh, when's it over? Next week?
Next Wednesday night. Soon enough.
I'm excited.
Yeah, we'll talk to Mark Stevens. As we said, he'll come in at 7 o'clock this morning. Cheryl McMahon's in here as it is a Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. That's it's champions and heroism come in all sorts of different forms.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Have certainly fit that bill this morning.
I'm inspired.
That's impressive.
By Kelsey Lee Barber, who's now my favourite person
in
the whole world.
Absolutely. How good was Kelsey?
She saved everyone's life with that one chuck, the last chuck. Oh,
Her last chuck.
That's pressure. That's actually one of the better, in all seriousness, clutch, your fourth, and then you throw the winning throw. That's pretty impressive.
And it was a huge throw too, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It was like three more metres. But she's good looking, 28, married, and she can be the face of the sport. So I'm happy I can come home and say we've found one. Because if I came home without one.
So a couple of questions on that.
Yes.
We spoke to her on the program.
I know. She's very good, yeah, too, media talent.
She kind of knew the importance of it, not just for her, but for the sport, and she was happy to share what she'd done. She kind of got it, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, well, she knows Sally Pearson, as we know, has been carrying the can, and I think pretty quickly she knew, I'm going to be the face, and she's capable of doing it, thankfully.
Well, and I remember you, Whitey. We've got the TVs up behind us here, and every single one of them had her on the breakfast TV shows. And yeah, it was great timing. And hopefully she can go on because the Olympics, you know, we need something, don't we?
Well, and it's just around the corner.
The track and field.
Like Tokyo's July. So we'll get through racing. Then it'll be like, oh, hang on. And it'll get exciting the next 6 months. So no, she was great. She was fantastic.
And no one else kind of popped up.
No.
As kind of someone we can keep our eye on.
Matt Denny, who chucks the discus, he was sixth. He could be good.
Yep.
And Brandon Stark, sixth as well. So we're going to have some medal hopes in the field, but not a lot of fast runners.
Did Brandon Stark jump well?
Oh, not really. Not for him. He's had an interrupted year. One good jump, but the local won that. So everyone saw back here, there was no one. First three nights, there was no one there. It was hilarious. But they got this high jumper who's world champion, and he delivered. They went berserk. So it got a bit of atmosphere in good old Doha.
So just from an Australian perspective, you talked about that we don't have very many fast runners.
No.
But that's no surprise. There was no real expectation going in.
A couple of them, like Stuart McSwain in the 15 and 5, a couple of them will learn from what they went through in the last week. But no, we've got with Sally gone, there's no obvious. Jessica Hull, who was the girl who's coached by the dodgy coach in America, she was sort of at the centre of a few issues. She ran well. So we've got a few that might be okay, but Tokyo's going to be too early. So, no, it's all track. Oh, not track. Field. Chucking things. We're a great nation of throwing things
and jumping over things. Yep.
That's all we care about now.
What was your overall feeling of the event?
Well, I don't think I'll be rushing back to Doha. Very hot. It was madness.
Well, hang on. The Soccer World Cup's there.
Oh, I don't
surely.
Know how that. I have no idea how they're going to do that. Because, A, the drinking laws. Let's just focus on that. There's going to be how many mad British, Russians. You know what they're like. So to find a beer is virtually impossible. I don't know how they're going to handle that. Public behaviour. It's a pretty small place too, so apparently they're going to put them on cruise ships and just park them in the docks. So I don't know how that's going to happen. I just can't get my head around it. It's just a hot place. I mean, why have a marathon at midnight? I mean, just things like that just made no sense. Well, 70% humidity, 32 degrees. Like standing there was just sweating bullets.
Well, you say why have it at midnight though, but if they'd had it...
Well, they had to.
Yeah.
But why... We know why they got it, because the sheikhs gave them a heap of money. But it made no sense as an organisation to run athletics, go, oh, this is a good idea. We'll run these at midnight. Oh, the athletes will be fine. And of course, it's not athlete welfare. So they're in trouble, Sebco, the whole week, just trying to justify it. And, oh, we're taking it to new people. Well, no one turned up to watch it. It should never have been there.
Imagine being an athlete getting up at 8 o'clock for breakfast, getting ready for your event, and it doesn't start till midnight.
But you literally couldn't go outside during the day. Like, it's so hot. It's madness.
So we saw on the television that there was very few people there. An illusion or was it...
No. There was no one there the first three nights. And then the last couple, because they're local hero. Yeah. And so they got a bit more interested. And their weekend's Friday, Saturday, so they got a few more people in. But the first couple of days when everyone was watching, there was no one there. They did the Port Adelaide and put tarps up. And it was just... It was a farce. But it got better. It got better as the week went on. But no, how they do World Cup, I cannot believe it.
So if someone that is as passionate as you are about track and field, this is your thing, this is your go-to type activity.
Gets me some holidays.
It does. Are you worried about the state of athletics, or is it is what it is kind of thing? Because, I mean...
Oh. Look, the drug thing won't go away. See, this is the issue.
Well, explain a little bit more about this.
Well, Christian Coleman wins the 100. So we're all obsessed with finding next Bolt, because Bolt was so good for the sport. And I believe he was clean. And a lot of people might argue that, but I believe he was. So Christian Coleman is his head of the throne. He misses three, failure tests, but they backdated one, so meaning he only got two. So he should have been suspended for 2 years.
Because he failed.
Whereabouts, he didn't turn up. Yeah, the whereabouts, which is not that difficult, just plugging in and... He says, oh, I was just sloppy. Well, it's not. So he came in with this question mark, wins it, so there's a cloud over that. Alberto Salazar, this great coach, Nike Origin Projects, this massive thing. Mo Farah, who's a legend of the sport, he coached him. It comes out 2 days in that he's been suspended for 4 years for doping. Then one of his athletes wins the 10K. Then one of his athletes wins the 800. So all that, you're just sitting there watching going, how do you spin this? To people who... There are a lot of doubters out there. You can't. It's just, there's too many drug question marks. And when that happens in front of you, you go, Donovan Brazier, the one in the 800, he took off at the 300 and won like Farlap. It's like, okay.
Mm.
And
it just raises
Hassan,
questions.
Hassan, the woman, went from 10K to 1500 and won it. I mean, that's like winning the Melbourne Cup and coming back for the Scalacci 3 days later. You just watch it and go,
When I heard Mo Farah's name in the mix too, and that's the unfortunate thing about when something like this happens, everyone gets painted with the same brush, and who knows what the truth is, and that's a really difficult thing.
Because Salazar, Mo Farah was an average runner. He came out here, Craig Mottram used to beat him, and then he went to Salazar and became this amazing, five, whatever he won.
Which can happen.
It can happen. But the detail of the Salazar thing and the charges they've got, like, if you read the whole thing, he's got his kids, he was testosterone, they were, like, practicing things to, so you can't tell me Mo Farah and others weren't caught in that, unfortunately.
And it is the unfortunate reality of it's affecting, I reckon, the Olympic Games, because we think of the Tour de France and how a lot of people have gone off that because you just don't trust what you see. Well, it's not just athletics, because it becomes a bigger issue around the Olympics, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Olympics sort of saves itself because we get a bit overexcited, but track and field, unfortunately, it's going the way of Lance Armstrong, and it always has had that issue, but it's going to in Tokyo again because of this Salazar stuff, and possibly the 100-meter champion having an asterisk over him. So you watch it; it's amazing. It's great to watch. And then
So we've got this amazing WADA. We've got WADA that sits across all these sports. That these athletes are tested far more than they ever were. That the technology around that's far better than it ever was. Are they always just one step ahead? How are more people not getting caught?
Well, Salazar, a lot of them had thyroid condition suddenly, Sherelle, so they could have these. So everyone, all these athletes, got told you've got thyroid, so you take this medication. So it's approved, but It's a rort. So he was always just looking for that 2% and testing things. So they're always a step ahead. But WADA and they've got better at backdating blood passports. So retrospectively, they're getting a lot of people. But that still might be a couple of years down the track. So we watch it happen, then, oh, you know, another Russian got disqualified, so you know, Jared Talent gets another. There's a lot of that medals retrospectively, which that's the problem we've got.
The idea is, I think there's 20 to 22 T20 internationals between now and the upcoming World Cup. So we feel the squad has a good mix there of top-order batsmen, middle-order batsmen, and plenty of bowlers there that offer a wide variety of difference in our view.
That is Trevor Hones, the chairman of selectors, going through the T20 squad for the upcoming fixtures against Sri Lanka and Pakistan. So that series gets underway on October 27. The squad: Finch, Agar, Carey, Cummins, Maxwell, Stark, Smith, McDermott, Richardson, Ty, Stanlake, Zampa, Turner and Warner. So the players that have missed out, that sort of jump out on at you off the page: no Darcy Short, Chris Lynn, Matthew Wade, and also Marcus Stoinis, and you could even throw in Nathan Lyon as well. So it's interesting, Scotty, they tried not only the likes of Lynn and Short in T20 cricket for Australia, but also in one-day cricket in the last 12 months. None of them made the World Cup squad, and now they're missing the T20 squad.
Yeah, no, they've cracked it with Stoinis, haven't they? He's paying a lot hefty price for that World Cup failures. Your man Ashton Turner there. Darcy Short, I think, is the backup batsman, but I don't mind this squad. You happy with it? You're the one who...
Yeah, no, I don't mind it. I think
Chris Lynn's not playing cricket anywhere other than travelling the world. And that's a pretty good point from Trevor Hones, I thought.
Yeah, well, let's listen to this, because I reckon it's a real whack.
Oh, yeah,
this
absolutely.
Is Trevor Hones talking about Chris Lynn.
Chris Lynn, we haven't considered him at the moment. Chris, at the moment, isn't playing any cricket locally or within Australia. Sure, he's been travelling the world playing T20 cricket. If he performs very well in the Big Bash, the upcoming Big Bash, our season here, of course, we can revisit that.
Have selectors talked with Lynn all about that?
No, I haven't spoken to Chris at all yet. To be honest, I don't know if he's in the country.
Wow.
That's not keeping in touch.
So I think from the point of view of the squad, it doesn't have a high-quality wrist spinner. Now, Adam Zampa will stay there. And look, Adam's been fine for Australia and been really good in the Big Bash for a while now, but he's not ripping games apart like other countries have the players that do that.
Lyon doesn't do that in T20.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. They're a little bit light in the sort of middle order department. I'm wrapped that Ashton Turner's there, but he's actually injured at the moment, so he's coming back from injury. But there's might be one short there. Ben McDermott. A lot of them like to bat high.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit surprised that Steve Smith is there. Maybe.
Really?
Maybe in T20 cricket. But,
yeah, but he can play anything. He can play five over cricket at the moment.
Put him in.
Just do anything.
Yeah. So
what about Stoinis, though? That was an interesting one for me. That was the one that stood out the most. I mean, he was really in favour until, as you say, until the World Cup, and now it's just all fallen over for him.
I think there's an issue with Marcus Stoinis in that he bats too slowly.
Oh, of course he does.
In short form cricket for the player that he is. So he should be batting a lot differently compared to what he does actually do. So I actually think, to be honest, I believe there's still a role for him as a sort of a middle order player bowler. Now, he bats high when he plays for the Melbourne Stars. If I was in the Australian selection committee, I'd actually be asking Dave Hussey, who's the new coach of the Stars, I want him to bat six or seven.
Yeah.
Because he needs to bat where he would play for Australia. And I think, you know, he's bowling, he's late order,
and get
potential late order hitting.
One.
Yeah. And say, right, go and actually learn the craft in a particular role we want him to play for Australia. And if they do that, then he's got an opportunity to get himself back into calculations.
The problem here is it's like that arrogance / confidence where, oh, I know I can hit a six, and so I'll bunt 10 balls because I'll be fine. And then he kept getting out. It's like, well, you've just wasted it.
Yeah.
And then
he did what he did. You wouldn't have seen this game, but domestically for WA recently, got 100 off 50 balls. He just smashed it. So he can, and this is what frustrates people. He can do it. He just chooses often not to. So not sure.
I think it's a whack from you've let us down, and it's a bit of like the Glenn Maxwell go back in the bad corner and if you do the right thing, we'll let you back in.
Mm. No, I don't.
Time in the naughty corner.
I do think there's a bit of that. I mean, look, there's no doubt that Dacia Short is unlucky with what he's been able to do.
Yeah, but
in the Big Bash, you know, Matthew Wade's the same. He's done extremely well. But when you've got Finch and Warner at the top, and then you've got Steve Smith there at three, there's not really... You can't fit everybody in.
Are we sure that Warner is going to perform in this
Why
form?
He?
Because he certainly
Well,
he hasn't.
Destroyed them in the IPL. So I think I think based on his latest or most recent run in T20 cricket, he's still...
Which was how long ago?
April, May.
It's a long time ago. Yeah. What if he gets in the Sheffield Shield and makes blob 1, 2, 3?
Well, this is the interesting point. We should go to this because Tim Payne had said publicly that he'll play, pretty much. He's got enough credits in the bank. He's had series
not
in the
anymore.
Ashes.
Timmy?
Yeah, but so that was what Tim Payne had said. This is what Trevor Hone said about David Warner and suggested that he probably needs to get a few runs in the start of the Shield season, which starts tomorrow.
The slate's wiped clean, of course, but different conditions, of course, but it's nice if we have in-form openers. There's no doubt about that. We'd like to see them all scoring runs to make our job even more difficult. David knows what he has to do. So same with anybody. Same with Marcus Harris. Same with any of the players that played in England. They know that form will be important.
So it's Queensland and New South Wales in the Shield. Ooh. So it starts off...
Gabba?
That's a very good question. It's north of here.
But the start of this Sheffield Shield season will be fascinating because the first couple of games, as we just heard, that these players need to make runs.
Absolutely.
And I even heard Finchie, we love him, of course, said, well, I might have another crack in case if I make the runs, I might get a gig. Because he might. Imagine if he has two or three good Shields. They go, well, we sort of dropped him, but he might be better than anyone else forgot.
It just shows how incredible it was that they're able to retain the Ashes based on the fact that so much didn't go right for them, particularly with the bat through that series, but they still were able
it's
to retain it.
An embarrassment for England
away
we're
from
allowed to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I wanted to talk about Kim Clijsters.
Yes, Kimmy.
Because this is going to be a really interesting
36?
Summer.
Aussie Kim.
Yeah.
Is it 36-year-old?
Yep, and she hasn't played for nearly a decade. It's been a long time since she's played. She's a former Australian Open champion, and she's coming out of retirement. And, it's going to be really interesting to see how she goes. This is Craig Tyler yesterday. It was the Australian Open launch, and he spoke about how significant it is going to be to have her back playing.
We're talking to her and her team. She's in training right now, and she wants to launch her comeback in Australia. This is one of her favourite places, and we call her Aussie Kim, of course. And over the coming month, we'll look at any decisions that related to that. But she's a former champion. She's great for the event, and we want to help where we can.
I reckon this story went under the radar a little bit when she announced that she was going to make a comeback. It's going to be an amazing effort.
Mother of three, Sherelle, 36.
Yes, mother of three.
That's a good effort. I mean, and the youngsters aren't hitting it any slower at these days. Like, there's some fairly talented youngsters in the game.
Yeah, and it will be interesting to see, this. I would love Kim Clijsters to come back. I've always loved the way she went about playing her tennis and her attitude, everything about what she did, I've always loved. But there's a danger, isn't there, of coming back in this situation that you kind of go, you weren't quite there. Not that I think that'll have a big impact on how we feel about Kim Clijsters, but without knowing and without seeing her for so long playing at that level, we don't know how far away she
is. Will she have the power? You need power nowadays. You can't come back with some little crafty...
I think it was
2005 type tennis.
Look, we're going to talk to Todd Woodbridge about this a little bit later on, so he clearly knows more about it than I do.
I
would suggest that women's tennis isn't very strong at the moment, and
no,
if
I agree
she's ever
that.
Going to be able to
Now's the time.
Come back, it might be now is a pretty good time. Now she has been retired for 7 years. 7 years is a long time to be retired. Mm. So when are you making your comeback?
Well, that's where I was sort of hinting.
Yes, I've been working hard at not. Hopefully Kim's been working harder at her tennis than I have at my netball. Yeah, 7 years, it is a long time. But I mean, but we don't know much about what she has been doing. And tennis is one of those games that you can just keep hitting the ball across the net, can't you? Keeping your touch. No? Is that ridiculous
thing?
You have
to move a little bit. Yeah,
well,
I know what you mean. I love it. I think the punters will love it. She'll get a lot of support. She'll draw a wild card.
Imagine her walking out onto centre court.
She'll play the world 350th because amazingly the draw will throw someone up she can beat. So it'll be great.
Yeah.
And Andy Murray, our 15-minute goodbye last year.
Yeah, that's right.
He was always coming back for that. You could tell
That was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, that farewell package that they put together.
It's like they didn't ask him because I remember watching him, he's sort of like...
And then he kind of went, oh, well.
Yeah, see how I go. And then, oh, well, the surgery went better than I thought. Here I am.
That was so bizarre.
Yeah, it was a bit weird, wasn't it? So the Australian Open was launched and the A-League season was launched yesterday.
What's happening?
So the
How
A-League,
are they travelling this year?
Well, the A-League decided that it would wait until after both the AFL and NRL grand finals took place before they launched their new season. It gets underway this weekend and it starts with a Melbourne derby with the victory taking on City. There's a few different Melbourne derbies you can have this year now.
Berisha. He's back.
Bissat. I'm not sure whether it really did capture the imagination. And this is the whole problem, particularly here in Victoria at this time of year with the trade period. Now, we're sort of trying to quarantine the trade period until after Steve-O comes in at 7 o'clock. But, they've got three teams now here in Victoria. Did they make the splash they wanted to make yesterday or Monday?
Well, surely they ring around and find out that the Aussie Open, you can get another day. Do it today.
Mm.
Yeah, again, look, what about the TV? That's the big thing for me. It's on ABC.
ABC, one game a weekend, Saturday twilight.
That's not a lot.
Where are the other games?
Fox.
Are they? Okay.
Yep.
Oh, it's in trouble. It needs a good year. It needs a good start. It needs a 5-4 derby opening to get the punters involved. Because they're on the nose. Big time.
Well, I mean, this is what frustrates me. And we talk about accessibility to teams and to players, to athletes. The Western United play their first game this weekend and they are not making anyone available to do interviews.
Are you kidding me?
And they played some, not all, but they played some of their games behind closed doors in the preseason.
What? Are they embarrassed? They're that bad?
I don't know, but it's disappointing.
They should have 20 players available each day, because most of Melbourne would know who they are.
Mark Redan is the new coach, and he...
Never heard of him.
No, he's a very significant figure in A-League history, and he's also coming off being not long ago was a special comments man for Fox, so he can, he's a good talker and he knows what he's doing, and they don't make
anyone
available. So that just makes it a little bit difficult for us to know a little bit about the team before they make their debut in the competition this week. The news coming through last night, breaking, was that Dale Steyn is joining the Melbourne Stars, and we're lucky enough to be joined by the new coach of the Melbourne Stars, the former captain of the Melbourne Stars, Dave Hussey. Huss, welcome.
Morning, Whitey. How are you?
Good, thank you. But I'm not as good as you. You'd be pretty happy with what you've been able to pull off.
Yeah, very happy. Dale Steyn, class. The star power, probably what the whole competition needs. And, we're looking forward to having the class of Dale Steyn put on the green of the Melbourne Stars for the next year.
We spoke to Darren Lehman last week about securing AB de Villiers, and he spoke about how long it took the Heat to be able to get that over the line. What's it been like to be able to convince Dale to come to Melbourne?
Yeah, it was by chance, really. I was in England with our list manager, Trent Woodhill, and we bumped into a player agent, and he was throwing all these players at us, and none of the players really excited us too much. And then he sort of mentioned, Dale Steyn walked past, and he said, oh, what about Dale? We said, yeah, we both jumped at this. Yeah, that'd be great, perfect. And then all of a sudden, we spoke to Dale and went back and forth probably for about 2 months, really, and then we settled on six games, and we're all very, very excited about it.
So, Hussey, he comes for the first six, and then we don't want him to get picked for South Africa, otherwise he goes. Is that what the scenario is?
Yeah, effectively, Scotty, yeah. Six games of Dale Steyn, I'd rather take that than having no games of Dale Steyn. So, yeah, very, very happy. But, in saying that, yeah, I'd love him for the whole season. But, yeah, six games is better than nothing, I'd say.
It is one of the challenges, Huss, isn't it, with these players kind of coming in and out at different times. On the back of the result last year, what are you feeling that you'll bring to the group as the new coach?
Well, I hope a bit of freshness, really. I don't think we really need to change too much, Sherelle. The group and the culture of the group has been it's been paramount for such a long time, and we don't really need to change too much. Just a little bit more freshness and just not changing too much, I guess, is the key. And I think we're that close to being a dominant force for many years to come.
Now, Huss, I've done my research. There's two spots left on your list. Does one of them have David Warner's name penciled in?
Ooh. You are a journalist, aren't you?
Correct. I ask the hard questions.
You do. I'd love to have Dave on the squad, but Tom's commitments are probably his hindrance in towards playing in the Big Bash. But we're still talking at the moment. We're really good friends, so you just never know what will happen in that space. But I think it's a long shot at this stage.
What potential is it? 3-4 games he could play, or is it 1 or 2 at best?
No, it's probably 3 or 4 games at this stage. It's depending on the Indian, I think it's a 4 or 5 match series in India, one-day series in the January period. So it's more about him wanting to have a bit of a rest time and recharge the batteries before that tour. And at this stage, I think he's going to rest up and spend a bit of time with his family. He's been away for such a long time over the winter, and then he's got a big hectic summer coming up as well. So it's a long shot at this stage, but you just never know. Maybe in future years to come.
And just one final one, Huss, before we let you go. We appreciate you joining us so early this morning. Just on Marcus Stoinis not being named in the T20 squad for Australia, I know you're really close to Marcus and you'll get to work with him really closely this year. What does he need to do to get back into that national team with a World Cup not far away?
Yeah, it's a good question. I saw the announcement of the World Cup squad yesterday, and I was a bit surprised that Marcus and Darcy Short haven't been selected, but I guess their names are there and thereabouts. For Marcus, he just needs to go back and probably in Shield cricket, one day cricket for WA, and then moving over to the Stars, just get there and just play, be himself, and just play the way he can play, and what makes him a good player, and just strike the ball at in excess of 140, and bowl well and feel well like he can do, and just be a consistent performer across the board, and I think you get more opportunities playing for Australia, not only in the short form but in the long form as well.
Mark Stevenson has joined
us.
There's trouble. There's trouble. Mason Cox, I won't say it's a big story developing, but there was a story that was coming out late yesterday that Essendon and Collingwood had spoken about Mason Cox. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it was a seismic shift yesterday, a little bit of a tremor about discussions between Essendon and Collingwood. Just got to the bottom of that one, Whitey. My mail is that it was Collingwood actually had a little bit of a whisper to Essendon and say, would you maybe consider this as an option? They were proactive to perhaps try and get a little bit of cap space and move the American pie somewhere else.
I wonder what his manager thinks.
Because he has currency. But I believe his management had no idea about any discussions happening. I even messaged Mason Cox and he said it was news to him. He's about to travel to Texas. He said if it does get serious, I'm sure they'll let me know. So I think that one's going nowhere, Whitey, in the end. If Essendon were keen on Mason Cox, perhaps it would go somewhere.
But no other clubs would be in that discussion?
Well, potentially there might be some clubs interested in Mason Cox.
But that's Collingwood seeing Joe Danaher leave Essendon and wanting to get rid of salary cap and go, mate, we could have a replacement for you.
Potentially.
Come and get the American.
It's proactive work, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's all right.
But I think the interesting thing about that is if that has happened, and we don't know for certain, is that if Collingwood feels like it needs to essentially cap dump and they've kind of shown their hand a little bit, I wonder whether other clubs will go, there a player that we might want to sort of potentially trade for if Collingwood's got this potential issue looming? Because it does
not
appear...
Not necessarily Mason Cox, but...
No,
some, yeah.
Someone else, and they go, well, you know, if we've got a situation where... Or Collingwood's got a situation where they've got De Goey Grundy,
issues, yeah.
Moore, Pendlebury, all coming out of contract in the next 12 months. To keep them all, they've had to pay a lot more for Elliott than they wanted to. Maybe other clubs now are going, well, gee, if they're starting to offer off players, what could we get, potentially?
No, that's right. I think Collingwood, they're also looking at their backline, and Dougal Howard is a buzz player, and I believe the Pies interested in him. If they could free some space and perhaps Cox went to Essendon, they're trying to get Dougal Howard in. They need a key defender, don't they, just to give themselves more flexibility, Whitey?
Well, he can play both ends.
Why is Port letting him go? Or has Dougal said, I want out, or why is he suddenly...
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. It's just one of these cases where Dougal, he's not a bad player.
Yeah, no.
As someone said, he's sort of reputation's lifted, though, in the past week without playing a game.
No, I think he had a good, back end to the year. Joe Danaher, what's the latest there?
Well, I just had a text on the way in, Whitey, and I think you're on the same page here. That
in the Uber?
In the Uber, yeah. It gives you the advantage of actually being able to text people and do your research. But it was interesting that they said that it's a long way from getting it done and may not happen.
To Sydney.
This is a source very close.
Oh.
To who?
Really?
To the negotiations.
So what's Essendon
want? There's no certain
want?
Deal, I don't think, that he'll get there, Whitey. And I think you're on the same page.
What's Essendon want? Can someone tell me what they want?
Well, Essendon wants more than two first-round draft picks.
More?
Yep. That's what their starting position has been. I think
that's a bit extravagant.
I think that if it went right to the death, they could probably get 5 and 9 for him.
5 and 9,
which would be Sydney's first pick plus the pick they get for Papley. But Essendon don't want picks.
Why is Carlton doing 9 for Tom Papley?
Well, that's a very good question in itself. But the reality is Essendon wants players, not picks, because they're set up for the now, and we've talked about this a lot on this program.
Not really? If you lose Joe Danaher and Ferratio.
Ferratio. Well, they lose two.
You're not for the now
it's
anymore.
It's a setback for them, but what I'm saying is that I think they're prepared to lose Danaher if they know they're going to be well compensated with a player of equivalence. Now, that might not necessarily be positional, but be of quality, a quality midfielder or something else. But they can't, at the moment, they can't find that player.
No. Who wants to leave and come to us?
So 5 and 9 would be a great result, I think, for Joe Danaher, but is it really what they want?
How desperate is Sydney for Joe Danaher?
Well, that's going to be the... We'll
I
find
think
out
they're
the next
very
week.
Committed by the sound of it.
Yeah.
I think it's this is the one they want, and generally they get him.
Yeah, generally, but I think it's going to be harder than normal, and just hold your horses on that
five
one, Scotty. We just expect him.
No,
to
I'm
get
saying
there.
That that's,
not
I'm not saying that will be the case. I'm saying that that is a potential scenario. But as I said, Essendon's gone and got Stringer. They've gone and got Shield. They've gone and got Saab.
Yeah, but they're not at the now. You know they're
no,
not.
I think. Well, they think they are.
Yeah,
I think
wrong.
They're caught in the valley.
Well,
the valley
get
of
two
nowhere
kids in the top ten, you'll be good in a couple of years.
But then they'll be just in the middle again. You know, they don't want to be in the middle.
But you lose
anymore.
Joe Danaher and Ratio, you're already back in the middle.
Essendon made the finals this year without Joe Danaher playing.
Correct.
They played 5 games and Fantasia played half the season. They still made finals.
Yeah, but they were a long way off it in the finals.
Yeah.
But injuries were a concern. Mm. I don't look at them and think they're going to beat Richmond and West Coast next year in a hurry.
Well, I mean, all I'm saying is they gave up their first pick in last year's draft and this year's draft.
For Dylan Shield.
So they don't think they're rebuilding to 5 and 9. They want players. And at the moment, they can't get them. And he is under contract, so they don't have to try.
Why don't we get 5 and 9 and give them to someone else for a good player?
That's what I'm saying. They can't find that player. Oh, okay. that
from anywhere.
Yeah, so I think they've looked around the edges to sort of just put a few feelers out there and thinking, at the moment, we can't. Mm. So unless they can be guaranteed of getting a high-profile player in, I don't think they'll do it. At this stage.
Trouble.
Oratio Fantasia.
Arats.
He had a knee operation yesterday, Whitey. Just a bit of a clean-up. And he'll meet his manager today, Michael Doughty, who just happens to be from
former
South Australia.
Adelaide
former
great.
Adelaide player. Do you read much into that, Whitey, that he's picked an Adelaide manager based
well,
in South
you'd,
Australia?
You'd think that, considering that Michael Doughty's from TLA, that if he was going to be staying in Victoria, that he would arguably go to
another
Ramity or an Adam Ramanaskis or someone like that.
So he's with the
Tom Petrora?
Yeah, so he's going for the outlying area, which is fair enough. I think that's a sure sign that he's heading there, Whitey.
Mm.
But it has drawn out, hasn't it, with the Arazio? Has he handled it well, do you think, personally?
Well, the media are trying to push people into making decisions on their
terms.
He couldn't
even find a manager.
But that's okay. They've got time. It's still got a week to go.
He clearly wants out.
He does.
We're not pretending he
obvious,
doesn't.
Isn't it?
No,
but
of course.
What's he worth?
15 to 25.
Yeah, I think more in the 20 to 25 area.
If he hadn't been injured the last 2 years, he's probably closer to 10 to 15, but he hasn't been playing.
You've got a fragile body in many ways, soft tissue.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think he's probably around 25, to be
honest. Good, very good player in their leadership group, very popular member of the
team. Well, their leadership group is questionable, let's be honest.
Well, it is. Yep.
That was a horrendous leadership group.
Yep.
Well, when you're losing two want out of the entire club at the end of the season, that's not a good sign, is it, Whitey?
No.
So, Tim Kelly's going to get done. Are we happy with this, Steve-O?
Yeah, I'm just having a look at it. Yeah, mail of this came through last night as well. 14-24.
33.
That's, I'm not sure about the 33, but it's definitely 14-24 and a first-round pick in 2020.
I mean, this is why Geelong are great. They could haggle and try and get more. They're like, all right, we'll do this. I mean, that's a pretty good deal for West Coast, looking at that. So first-round pick next year, they'll be good. That'll be 18 or something.
They win the premiership.
Yeah, which they, you know, they've got Kelly. So that this is why Geelong's a good football club. That's all I'll say.
Well, you think that it's a caring, sharing
deal. Yeah, absolutely.
I think Geelong have done very well out of this.
But why Geelong has agreed to that is...